specifically knows, was founded in 71, and it's an international independent medical humanitarian organization. In 2015, we had projects in around 70 countries. We are running on 5 operational centers, 24 associations, and of course MSF International. In 2015, we had a bit more than 8.6 million outpatients and a bit more than 1.7 million vaccinations, measles vaccinations, just to throw a few figures in. But we are focusing mainly on areas of conflict and natural disasters. The needs on the ground for us is we have to know how many people are there. When we arrive, it looks very often like this. This is in Uganda, the new people arriving. And we have to know how many people are there, how many settlements do exist, what kind of settlements do exist. Is it tents, plastic sheeting? How is the infrastructure? Are the health centers, markets, water sources, or the distances to water sources and health facilities? What's the topography? And that's very, very important to plan for camps. You don't want to settle people in an unsuitable place without sufficient drainage, for example. How is the access to the area? Can we access it by land or only by sea during the rain season? Are there problems, are there roads existing? And of course, we use it to plot our IPIO data on it. And this is very, very closely linked to land use issues. The specific diseases favor specific land uses. So to get answers to all these questions, we do have a GIS unit now in Geneva, which is serving all 5 operational centers and all the projects of MSF. So you are in a country, you can request through your cell, because even we have hierarchies, to the GIS unit. The GIS unit is basically a map center where you can search for existing maps. Are these maps already existing or not? If yes, you just download them. Or you feed your own data in. Or if this is not existing, you can even request GIS experts to come to your project to do mapping for you. To have maps and to have mainly the plotting of AP data. Just how it goes. And until 2015, 32 specialists were deployed. Mainly, I have to say, in Ebola, where they did a lot of mapping on Ebola cases and also checking. So how we organized? So you send, you're sitting in the field, you fill in a request form to the unit, and then it's going to the offices. So we do have, in England, the MANSA unit, which is working together with Missing Maps and HUT, and who are now also using MapSwipe to create maps of places, to bring people basically on the map, vulnerable populations. And it's us in the back office in Vienna. We are mainly working together with the University of Salzburg to create the analysis needed in the project. Oops. The map center, it's one of the pillars of the activities where we can download maps, and we are searching actively for maps or existing maps. And it's a database, so we can also get information on it, but you can also give information to the database. So you collect information on the ground, you feed it back into the platform, and it can be used by other projects or other headquarters. So on the ground, we have the field teams who are either having a GIS team there to collect data, You have the normal teams in the country providing expert data, regular project data, whatsoever, IP data, and also headquarters managed to provide data. Not as good ones, but still. This was in Congo, DRC, where they did a huge mapping for malaria. In Vienna, we're focusing on Earth observation-based data. And we have long-standing cooperations with several partners. First of all, ZGIS, where we have an MOU since 2011, Technical University and DLR. And we had several projects already with all of them. So Earth Observation was together with ZGIS. And it was mainly the development of the population monitoring tool, groundwater exploration tool, and environmental changes. So TIDA was a consortium with Technical University Vienna, BOKU, Zambiasa, and MSF. And both of these projects were funded by FFG. And the results are all in the map center, so our colleagues can download or request if needed. It's now a few examples what how do things look like. So the population camp, the population monitoring in camp settings. An example of Minkaman, where we figured out how many houses are there, how the changes happening within a camp, because camps are very, very dynamic. Camps are always changing, people are moving around for whatever reasons. They don't stick to the place you get. Sometimes they find family back or they don't feel safe, so they do move. And it's important to move to know where they're moving to plan better for the services. How many people are there? And also, you will see some, we distinguish between different roof material, which is an important thing to know, because then we know how long people are there. Different roof materials have different distribution plates. And this is how it looks like on the ground. So if you, it's a flyover and you can't just count, but we have to know how many people are there. And this is looks like when you're really, really there. Again, difficult to count. Another example would have been one of the oldest refugee camps existing for this time being. It's the Dadaab complex, so again, counting how many people are there. This was done during the huge impact influx in 2011-12. But some thousand people arrived every day within the camp boundaries. It's a density map to see what's the density in different places of the camps. Because with this we have to adjust and our services. We have to provide more clinics, more water, and so on. Again, how things changed, and you can see the outskirts are not very, very much liked, so people moved inside the camp. This is how it looks like on the ground, and this is how it looked like when new arrivals came. But we also have the problem, we have to know in urban settings, how many people are living in urban settings. Good example was Haiti. After the earthquake, we were asked by our colleagues if we can find a way to see how many people are living in two specific districts of Port-au-Prince. It was for cholera preparedness. And there are no data existing, how many people are living. So it's extremely difficult for planning. And with Salzburg together, we got this information. And the maps were delivered. The figures were known. And I think 1 or 2 weeks later, cholera really broke out again. So it was in time. And here we worked with the floor height, or height of the buildings divided by the floors. This is how it looks like. Approximately from the same time, just a normal street in Port-au-Prince. And you can see how difficult it is to figure out how many people could live there. The houses are like, they're grown organically. It's against all statics, these houses. Groundwater, another very, very important issue for us. We have to provide water to people. And this we have to provide as quick as possible. So the important question is, where's groundwater either to be accessed by drilling or by jetting? Because it's the most reliable source. You can't rely on surface water alone. This is one of the camps. This was just to see where there are seasonal water bodies. If the people, the teams arriving in the dry season, the seasonal water bodies are not there, but the formations would be suitable for jetting. So let's show them where they are. We can do, and this was in the jetting carried out. And jetting is very, very quick, so you can provide good amount of water within a very, very short period of time. Vegetation, land cover, another important thing for us. This is how one of the camps looked like in South Sudan, how the vegetation cover is changing in time, deforestation mainly, but also other issues. Another one was, we looked specifically for the habitat of a tsetse fly for sleeping sickness, because this is important to find out where are these flies living, that people don't go there, but also to get vector control in place. So this is how it looks like on the ground. It looks beautiful. Yes. If there wouldn't be the tsetse fly. And that's the fly as such. Yeah. And sleeping sickness is a very, very difficult disease to treat. It's one of the neglected diseases. So there are no really good treatment existing. I think the existing treatment is from the 50s. So it's very old treatment and dangerous for patients. So very important for protection. And of course, natural disasters, for us important. This was in Malawi during a flooding where we had to know how many places are still flooded for our mobile clinics. This looks how it looks like on the ground. Because it's important to plan either to reach people by car or by boat, but people do need access to medical care during floods. Satida, this was the project together with the Technical University, is on drought risk assessment, and the new thing is that it also has the soil moisture in this system. So that's one of the maps you get. And we combined it with a questionnaire on the ground to have also food security questions in there and to provide information back to our sites. And the last one, the last one was the Borule project with the DLR. Borule is a disease where transmission is not really known up to now. And so it's very painful and very difficult to treat. So this was a project in Cameroon where there was the localization mainly of the diseases, but also a potential risk infection based on land cover and water bodies was developed to make sure that people can either avoid the places, or we do know that's high risk areas to go. This is how it looks like in this area of Cameroon at Kunalinga. And all this is what we have now in the map center. So we're closing this hike from the map center, going to our Earth observation based things back to the map center.